Hogstein.
Let's do this. Let's have some fun.
Let's do.
I'm not going
to
do my...
How's that go? Weird. Let's get ready to rumble!
Let's get ready to rumble!
We should have just gone in with that. Oh, that was fun. Actually, you know what? We're going to. Welcome to Hogstye. That was just
nobody knows what
that.
We're talking about, Alex.
Yeah. Well, now they will, because we're going to play that. Okay. I'll edit it in.
Very nice.
Thank you for that so much. I've not embarrassed myself enough on this show.
Welcome to the show. It is Alex. It is Dave. It is Steve. Happy post-Super Bowl end of the season. I hope you guys enjoyed the Super Bowl. I know I did. You can't see. I enjoyed it because I found a four-pack of the By Dan beer, and that's what I drank during the whole thing.
By Dan.
And how was that beer?
Very average IPA. I mean, all IPAs are very average. The right. Beer they made when Dan Snyder sold the team.
Who is they exactly? India Pale Ale.
It is. What is it? Old Ox Brewing Company, I believe. Yeah, Old Ox Brewing, a Virginia brewery right by where the Redskins Park is.
I mean, you have to admire their pettiness, you know, really.
And my question is, did they send Dan a case of beer on his way out?
I would hope so. That'd be fantastic.
It really would have been, because Dan would never have drank it either.
But no. You can, like, they started selling it and it started going like gangbusters when it happened. If you don't, you guys wouldn't remember because you don't live in the area. But the problem is you can only get it at Wegmans in, like, Virginia out in Ashburn. I just happened to be out that way and saw some. And I was like, okay, I got to get it for the game.
Yeah, you had to have it. I agree. Yeah, I might have bought it. I don't even drink alcohol. I might have wanted it.
You would just keep one to collect the can.
By the way, we're sorry we're a day late for this. It's my fault. I forgot all about Valentine's Day, and we had a schedule screw-up that's on me, so sorry about that.
Look, Valentine's Day, we all agree, fake holiday, but my wife wanted to do something. It was a thing, you know? Did you do anything? No?
Well, let's see. I had something ordered to be sent. It was a nice arrangement. And then I get a message like halfway through the day saying, unable to fulfill this. Here are some other options. The options they give me were like a third of what it was that I was actually originally ordered.
Oh,
and it was
no.
Like, I saw no discount, no nothing. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So I just went cancel order and got refunded back and told the wife, I said, now everything got screwed up. I'm going to wind up stop at the store. And she was like, no, don't bother wasting your money with that. I'd just rather you just be home and we'll have dinner together. And that's it. Got a glass of wine. That was it. In fact, she made a real nice scallop and a risotto dish with garlic bread.
Nice.
It's actually very, very good.
Nice. That scallops are great, great Valentine's food. People always go lobster. Scallops are better.
When you're in my world, Valentine's Day doesn't really register as a holiday too much. So
No. When you are single, it does, that's what happens.
Although somebody at my office told me I need to bring Valentine's Day stuff in prepaid. I was like, well, I'm not trying to date these people. I'm not doing that.
Right.
You're not bringing stuff into the office for Valentine's
Day.
Yeah, I thought. This is weird. Yeah.
It was weird in elementary school when you had to do it. That's very weird to do it.
Well, I'll tell you the funny thing that happened, actually, though. Yesterday, I walk in at like 8 o'clock, and there's a delivery guy. Now, our door at my office is locked, so you can check in, and you can get to a floor, but you can't get through the lobby. And so I'm walking through the lobby to go to my door, and there's a flower delivery guy who's been standing there, so he says, for like 20 minutes. Because he can't, and he's got this huge thing of flowers, and he can't get in, and the person isn't there yet. So he's desperate to leave, and so he just says, can you deliver these flowers? And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And so I work in a big office, and so I had to carry these flowers down the hall to a random person's office who I didn't really know and say, you know, here's your flowers from me to you, you know.
Steve took credit right away.
And now Steve has a date tomorrow night.
No, the funny thing was she wasn't there, and so I just left him on her desk without any explanation whatsoever. Whether or not she ever knows how they got there, like nobody but me knows because nobody was there but me.
Right. Hey, speaking of your work, I guess you won your work bet about the Super Bowl and the halftime show.
There was no question I was going to win the work
bet. No, right. There was no question, but you're going to get a free lunch out of the fact that Taylor Swift did not perform.
Yeah.
So good job.
That was supposed to be tomorrow, but we had to reschedule for our scheduling conflict, so that'll be occur next week.
Okay. Yes, for those who don't remember, Steve's coworker bet him that Taylor Swift was going to surprise everyone and perform at the halftime show with Usher, and that did not happen.
I said, I don't want to take your money, but okay, yeah. You know, it's going to happen. All right. No, now look not. Who's getting the free lunch.
Yeah. Yep, you are. And you know, it was a great game. On it.
Yeah.
We should really talk about the game a little, I guess, because that was a good... People were complaining about it being, like, boring the first half because it was defensive. I thought it was a fun game overall. You know, two teams feeling each other out in that first half, trying to figure each other out. And then it comes down to the final 3 seconds of overtime.
Right. That,
what else do you want in a Super Bowl? That's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, that first half, it was like... Any third down they go, whether short or long, man, you weren't even sure if they were even going to make the first down. That's how kind of riveting the game was in that first half. I actually thoroughly enjoyed it.
It was a great game, and you know, we all called the close game,
right?
And I think Alex, you predicted San Francisco just to kind of be different, but Dave actually called the overtime.
Yeah,
I said it was going to come down to
right
the
here.
Yeah, I said it was going to come down to the end of the fourth quarter. You actually called overtime, so you were closer than all of us on it.
Right.
I think I got very close on overall scores. Like, obviously the score flipped, but I was like 2 points off.
I said my official published prediction score-wise was 24-20 and ended up being 25-19. So yeah. I was really close.
Yeah, we all kind of knew it was going to be in that range. I think we did a good job there. And like you said, I called San Francisco. I said in the thing, I just need – somebody needs to pick them.
I didn't think you – I wasn't sure you really believed it. But, you know, look, I mean, it was really hard to doubt Patrick Mahomes, and it looked like by that last drive in the fourth quarter, it looked like the entire world knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The guy wasn't going to fail.
No. No, he is on another level right now in terms of his play. And – everyone's getting into this obsessive, is he the greatest of all time stuff. You know, wait till he retires. You know, like, there's way too much time left in his career to really have this argument of is he better than
year
Tom Brady.
Year 6 or 7 or something now, whatever. I mean, in like year 6 or 7 or something.
He's 28 years old.
Yeah, he's got a ton of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's let it play out for another 10 years and let's talk about it. Because, I mean, you know. What made Brady the greatest, though?
I don't think he was the greatest.
25 years.
I don't think he is the greatest.
Okay.
Silence. I don't. I mean, he's got the most Super Bowl rings, granted. But if I had to win one game, here's my order, okay? John Elway, number one.
Mm.
Peyton Manning, number two. Aaron Rodgers, number three. Dan Marino, then Brady. That's where I would go.
No Montana in that. You got to be kidding me.
I think Montana was a beneficiary of an outstanding team and a unique system.
Nah,
he didn't do as well in Kansas City.
No, but that's the thing, though. They won a championship before the nucleus of that team even came together. He beat a Cincinnati Bengal team in that Super Bowl that was number one against the pass. And the top overall defense, and he drew, and that final drive he had against them, you know, going down the stretch right there, it was just, I mean, that just defined what Montana's career was going to be all about. I mean, Montana was probably the one of the most precise passers I ever watched in my life, up until what you've seen in this recent era right now, and of course Marino during that time too.
I mean, it's a shade of gray, okay? I'm not saying he was bad. He was a great quarterback, but I think he was a beneficiary more than some other players with the team and the coach around him. And I think Brady was too. Brady was with Belichick. It's a bit of a chicken and egg argument, granted, but if you had to win one game, there's nobody I would pick but John Elway.
I mean, and so if we're doing the one game thing, then I think Patrick Mahomes does shoot way up the list too. Right. I will say that because
you pick Elway, but Elway couldn't win that one game until he had all the components around him. Now
he had really bad teams around him, though.
I know.
Same with Dan Marino.
Marino was a victim of just horrible roster development and not horrible coaching, but was like he never had a run game around him. He had great receivers. The defense were okay. And he constantly had to move around the pocket because the offensive line was never all that great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was a product of bad roster development.
Yes.
I think when you talk about players, a lot of people fall victim to recency bias.
Sure.
You know, I mean, we're seeing these guys now, so they're the greatest ever. You know, it's like kind of like people forget that Jimi Hendrix was the greatest, you know, guitar player ever. But he's been dead forever, and a lot of people don't know who he is. So, you know, so you kind of minimize. And so it's the same with sports figures. You know, I've always said Wilt Chamberlain's the best basketball player ever. I didn't ever see Wilt Chamberlain play. Mm-hmm. You know, but everybody saw Jordan. So to most people, it's Jordan. But to me, the guy who dominated the most was Wilt Chamberlain. And in football, I think, given the circumstances and the time, to me, in my view, nobody beat Elway, including Brady. That's just the way I see it. I try to eliminate the recency bias, and it Montana was forever ago too. So you do the same thing. But I mean, a lot of people, I just saw Brady, and he's the greatest.
Right.
And yeah, there's no doubt his record is the greatest. Nobody can dispute his body of work is the greatest. That's not what
I'm talking about. If you found an old timer, they would tell you Johnny Unitas belongs in the list. You know, like that's the thing you got to remember.
Or even Otto Graham going that far back.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Sammy Baugh, you know.
Yeah. Sammy. Yep. I mean, you can't compare football. I think more than even basketball, you really can't compare the eras.
You can't.
Yeah, it's tough. It is tough to do that. I agree.
Yeah, the rules have changed so much. The one thing that all sports have in common is the equipment and the technology around the game has changed dramatically.
Well, I think because I'm Mr. Stats here, if you look at quarterbacks of the eras gone by, the completion percentage has gone way up recently. And that is not necessarily because these quarterbacks are way better. It's the rules are dramatically different. The offenses are dramatically different. You can't even breathe on a quarterback now without getting a penalty. And you can't breathe on a wide receiver without. But they used to, if anybody watched film from the 80s and the 70s, they used to knock those receivers out downfield.
Oh yeah, I'll never forget reading a story about Sammy Baugh and the first Super Bowl that they won, where the Bears' strategy was literally every time they got to Sammy Baugh, try and break his knee so that he would have to leave the game. Like that was football. That was an official football strategy in the day.
That would get you suspended in today's world.
Yes.
You know, maybe thrown out of the league for a year for doing so, for adopting a strategy like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was the norm in the 30s.
Right.
Like it was acceptable to hurt the person.
I just think if you put some of those guys in the situation today.
Oh, absolutely.
It would be a totally, you know, like the stats. It's really hard to compare stats and quarterbacks of different years. That's what I'm saying.
Been my thing with like Montana with this guy at work. I say if you picked up Montana and the way he was and his precision, how he threw the ball and how accurate he was, you put him in this error. In fact, you put him in this error in the AFC against Brady. I don't think Brady wins as many Super Bowls. I think Montana would be a thorn in his side, where Brady was a thorn in Manning's side. Because the one thing Montana had always done, he always rose the occasion, just like Elway. It's like Marino on the most part for what he could do with the roster around him, you know, and one guy that doesn't get talked nearly enough because he was really the only guy on that team was Warren Moon. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who could make every throw on the field, you know, his timing, his precision, his anticipation, everything was phenomenal on him. I mean, he definitely warrants a conversation of being top five, but unfortunately, that run and shoot at that time, minimal to no running game. They had a good defense for a stretch there, but other than that.
He was a bit before his time, you know.
Yeah. Yes, sure. He was. Yeah. Just like Randall Cunningham was a lot before his time.
Yeah. Well,
true.
So,
I mean, that it, they were still playing in the Smash Mouth era. So, but yes, they were both way right. before his time. You're right.
But before we move on, though, about the yeah. Super Bowl, I'd like to say that the Usher halftime show has my vote for worst halftime show performance in Super Bowl history, in the modern Super Bowl history. I thought it was terrible. I thought
it wasn't good, but I don't know if it were was all, the worst.
He had a live mic for at least the first couple songs. I didn't know any of the songs, but he had a live mic for a first couple songs. But the sound mix was really bad. I thought the yeah. the visuals, the camera work was really bad. The songs were bad. You know, I didn't know. A lot of people didn't know who any of those people were, any of those songs. He's, you know, people who like R&B did. But I don't, I just thought it was, I mean, his performance, his dancing stuff was fun, I guess. But I thought it was overall, the production was terrible.
So,
terrible show.
Strictly from a pure production view, and you guys know that's what I do for a living.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but ever since Jay-Z has taken over, the quality of the production has dropped dramatically. And specifically the audio quality. How is it that Jay-Z, one of the greatest producers of music, can't do a live event? Like, all the this happens every year. The mic quality is off. I don't know mm-hmm. what it is. It's just off every time.
They lost him in the mix. He got totally drowned in the mix.
Yeah,
I thought.
Right. And they've done that 5 years in a row, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, to whoever it is.
The and Weeknd the visuals were, too. The problem with the visuals was that the production he was putting up, forget the fact that I hated the songs, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Or didn't know any of them hated them, doesn't matter. The visuals needed to have a wider scope mm-hmm. to get people to understand what was happening. And it was just so trained in, you know, it would have been much better live, I think, to see the production of it. And the camera work just didn't capture it.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's and it blows my mind how like bad the production quality's been last few years.
And I'll say it again one more time. I do every year.
You just
it's okay to not have rappers and R&B guys at the halftime show. We can be diverse people. Jay-Z yeah. can't, but the rest of the world is begging for a little diversity.
Yeah, yeah.
All I know is I dozed off, woke up, it was second down with. With that 14:34 in the third.
See, I had
quarter.
To watch perfect... it. I haven't watched the last couple halftime shows because I'm just not interested. But this one I had to watch because I wanted to see if I was going to win my bet.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Dolly Parton put on that terrible halftime show.
She was great.
That was better than Usher's.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a Dolly fan, but you could do something like that. It would be great. You know, that'd be a great yeah. little halftime Super Bowl.
I don't think it was great just because I don't think she can sing certain songs very well that she sang.
Well, do you know the backstory of that? So she's putting out the rock and roll album and all of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. I know. She's putting it because she got in the Hall of Fame.
Which is ridiculous. It. Another yeah. whole nother podcast, but that's stupid.
A whole nother podcast of stupidity. Yeah. yeah.
And did you guys see the little video went around and showed the Super Bowl ticket prices over the years?
I did not.
I've seen those before. I know the price to get in was $7,000-$8,000 this year for the cheapest.
Oh, it was the price range I saw was anywhere from $8,000 all the way up to $27,000.
There is no way I would ever pay that.
There's no way I'm paying more than $500 for a seat.
I have always
$1,000 and then yeah. $8,000. Stop it.
I've always said that there is no 2 hours of entertainment, or even 3.5 hours of entertainment that is worth even $1,000. No,
right?
Not for
me. I mean,
me,
there's
not.
Certain people who will pay that much for about 3 minutes of entertainment.
I'm not going to even a concert. I'm not doing that for more than a couple $100. It's just I'm just not.
So Steve will never go to space, is what I'm hearing. Steve's never going to fly that Virgin flight for $100,000 to...
No, hell no.
yeah.
Now, if I was a diehard Detroit Lion fan, like this, like I bled blue and everything, I went to the core, it'd be really tough for me not to try to find the money to go. That'd probably be the only situation.
Nope.
The only situation.
I'll be on the couch.
Dave, I got news for you. Being a Commanders fan is not any different right now than a Detroit Lions fan.
You know
But I have my fill of Super Bowl championships with the Redskins.
Sure.
So whatever the Commanders do, that's fine. I'm never going to go to one of the Super Bowl games. The parade, sure, but
Alex is just saying, if you're talking about the dregs of the NFL, Washington's right there with them.
Well, no, I get that, but see, no Lions fans ever experienced a championship. At least me as a Redskins fans, I have.
That's true.
That's true.
We were all very young, but we experienced it.
Barely.
So speaking of the parade, though, I guess we should at least mention, there was that terrible shooting at the Super Bowl parade. It wasn't terrorism, it doesn't look like. It wasn't some kind of political thing, it doesn't look like. Just two idiots shooting at each other. But 21 people were injured, one person killed, which is awful.
And I think 12 children, right? Going to the hospital, right?
That's the worst part.
Yeah.
Certainly are. I mean, the discussion of that is another show, but certainly our hearts go out to the people who are injured.
And, you know, if you think you're like, that's the place to get into a shootout is in a large crowd, you know, just aim the gun upward would be my advice to anybody who thinks that's a good idea.
Put it at yourself.
Put it on your chin. Aim up.
Yeah, there you go.
That's my thought.
And hopefully the police have caught the right people. And
one fan that saw one of the shooters that was running, ran right by me, chased him down, and actually tackled him.
Yeah, I saw that. There's a video. Yeah. There's a video of it. I did saw it. Yeah, good for that guy. That's bravery right there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, there were multiple people arrested at certain points, but it sounds like it was two people shooting at each other is what I've heard.
Yeah.
So we'll see when everything's sorted out what actually happened, but not that it matters in the end, I guess.
You know,
it's just a big mess, horrible situation.
Terrible tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And on that note,
let's talk about the Washington Commanders some.
That's a tragedy.
So we got a couple things to cover. The offensive and defensive coordinator, that is Kingsbury and Joe Witt, they had their interview press conferences today. This is Thursday that we're recording this. It looks like everyone really likes Joe Witt Jr.'s press conference from what I saw on social media. I listened to both. Steve, you listened. I know Dave listened. And I agree. He comes off very high energy, very passionate about his work. I liked a lot of what I've heard from all these guys, frankly. I think if they aren't all on the same page, they sure talk like it, which is nice.
I mean, it was a lot of platitudes. Sure. You know, he didn't say a ton that was specifically insightful to the type of defenses he's going to run, the players he's looking for, and I'm not blaming him for it. I mean, he's not going to do that at an introductory press conference.
He quite literally was asked, what kind of players are you looking for? He says, I'm not saying that because I don't want to give anyone an edge on. Like,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and so there's nothing like that really came out of it necessarily. But the things I got out of it, you know, my fear when I saw his resume was like, this guy is really just a defensive backs coach. And he repeatedly said, I'm a backfield guy. He said that over and over and over again. He's not hiding it, but he also made the point to say, I'm involved in the defensive line, and he's really approaching it from a big picture kind of systematic process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, look, everybody came from something.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean the guy's not going to be a good defensive coordinator. And he said in his view he was ready back in 2015 in terms of knowledge of the game and everything. So I was encouraged by what he said. I liked his opening in the first couple statements. He said something like, you know, we're people who violently throw our bodies around or something like that. And I thought that was good.
Right. We're going to run fast and hit hard, I think is kind of
that's what he said. But he really said, like, violently throw our bodies around or something that. I thought that was a good quote. So I like the press conference, but that's what I got out of it.
Well, I know the one thing that I like probably said the most for me was when he started talking about how he has dyslexia. You know, started talking about, you know, you got to approach, you know, you have to be able to approach and teach these players in multiple ways. Where his one quote was if a coach says a player can't learn, he probably can't coach. That was a beautiful line. I saw Nikki Javala quoted that from the press conference. That's a great line because I mean, not only showing accountability in what you're doing, it's showing a focus of being able to assess the player you have,
mm-hmm.
what's the best way to get through to that player, and if it takes something other than just, you know, hey, here's the book, and here you go on the board, I'm going to show you everything. If you got to do something more unique and something that's going to cater to a certain player because of what he may or may not lack, I mean, that's just great awareness on being able to adapt to your roster and your players. And that only lends to development of a roster and being able to get these players to where they need to be, which is huge. Something we haven't seen in Washington. And you tell me when.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've had certain position coaches over the last few years who are really good. Like, they want to be teacher type coaches. But,
yeah, like McVay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
McVay is a great example, you know, especially when it came to tight ends and quarterbacks when he was doing the position stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to find guys. And I think in the NFL, it's become so in vogue to be obsessed with X's and O's. And I just want a coordinator who can, you know, draw up a great scheme. Like, they get so obsessed with that. I think a lot of these guys forget that the key to great coaching is teaching. It is right. Saying, all right, you're my defensive end. What moves do you have? What moves can we add to your arsenal to build off of this? It's that kind of stuff. That's how you build a great team.
Well, and I think I've been saying this recently. I've recently come to the realization that in the NFL, schemes don't really win. You know, that's not really what wins. You can win a lot of games with, you know, darn near any reasonable NFL quality scheme. You know, that's
sure.
Play the West Coast.
There are teams that come out and run things that are flat out not that quality. But
yeah. Right. I'm not talking about running a high school offense. I mean, within reason, all these different systems have won. And I think what really wins football games, it creates a long-term winning culture, at least among the coaches, is the right attitude and the abilities to, one, teach, yeah, granted, but to properly motivate these guys,
mm-hmm.
and two, pick the right players to play.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, another thing that Kingsbury mentioned in his, I think it was, he said that it was one of those things we've always advocated on this show. Figure out your player's strengths, and those are the things you should be doing in the game.
Well, it's funny you say that, because Kingsbury actually did kind of hint around about something substantive.
Yeah.
They asked him about air raid offense, and he kind of minimized the air raid offense. And mm-hmm. he didn't say it quite like this, but he was implying that it would be a mistake to just assume that Washington is going to be all air raid all the time.
Right.
You know, a meaning that he's kind of evolved, and he made a reference to, you know, we did it at Texas Tech under Mike Leach and, you know, all of that. And what he was kind of hinting around about was, like, that's not an appropriate offense in the NFL setting. And I wrote this long column last week about Kingsbury, and I realized he ran the ball a decent amount of time. And granted, a lot of it was Kyler Murray, but you play the cards you're dealt. Murray's a runner. You know, he wasn't an all passing all the time guy. And that's the substantive thing I got out of Kingsbury's was that is we can expect a more, quote, normal offense. And anything, literally anything, is more run centric than what Eric Bieniemy did last year. It was the least running team in the NFL.
Sure. I mean, but we've heard this now from Dan Quinn, from Joe Witt too, that, yeah, okay, these guys were known for their Legion of Boom cover three defense. They've said, we have to move away from that because that's no longer working in the NFL. This is Kingsbury kind of hitting those same notes on the offensive side.
Right.
Yeah, this is what I did. I know it's not going to work going forward. We got to figure out something new with the guys we get. Like,
and they don't even know who the quarterback's going to be.
No,
I mean,
right.
they don't have an offensive line. Witt doesn't have a linebacker group. I mean, there's a ton of work. I mean, they both of them made a point to say we are currently evaluating players.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Kingsbury said he was only on game three in terms of evaluation.
Yeah. Whatever he said. They hadn't made it far.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, Kingsbury comes off a little more subdued, which was, I thought, interesting. You know, you'd think a ex-head coach is going to be high energy, but maybe not always. Maybe he's still a little burned out from dealing with Kyler Murray. I don't know. We do know the rest of the coaches.
I think Kingsbury was probably a little bit worn out about having to stoop down constantly so he can be at Kyler Murray's same height.
Yeah. I'm going to take a knee, Kyler. You just stand there.
Hey, I mean, Kyler's more at your height, no matter what he puts in his bio.
Yeah, right.
My height, too. I'm not any taller than you, Dave. I'm a little bit everybody's a little taller than Dave, but.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Not much.
So, not much. So.
So the rest of the coaching staff kind of filled out. There might be a few more people here and there that they hire. I should mention they hired their assistant GM, Lance Newmark, who is he was the deputy with the Lions, who you mentioned, Dave, a little bit ago.
Yep.
So he helped them build that team. That's a great team. So, like, if you're just looking at the resume from there, that's a good sign.
Well, there was one thing with him that I saw a video. He'd done an interview, and he said that the one thing that he does when he scouts any players before he has any interviews or knows what the character of the players are or anything or their history or anything, he sits down and he watches the tape. He watches the tape on the players, and he sees what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and he puts them into a category. And he does that for all the players, and then he builds that list. Once he builds that list, then he starts going in there and says, well, okay, well, you know, whether, you know, injury history, character issues, or whatever it is, then that's where you kind of start moving guys over to here or there, down the board or off the board entirely. But he tape is number one. That's the first thing you go to, and you're not doing your job if you don't do that first. That right there is what really hit me the most on him.
That is interesting that, you know, just to hear other guys' strategies with how they're doing that stuff. I bet you every GM scout has a different way of going about it, honestly. I assume there's probably not one way that.
Well, of course, there's a lot of right. I mean, there's not one way to do all this stuff. I don't think we'd be totally honest to not acknowledge some of the potential concerns, particularly about both of them. You know, but like Kingsbury did not have ultimate success in Arizona. I mean, and Kyler Murray has been good, not great. I'd say they did sign him to a big contract, but he's
not been better since he left. That's for sure.
No. Right. And he's a top 10 quarterback. No, but you know, we only had like one winning season in Arizona.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, then he was in, you know, USC for a year, and I mean, it's...
Well, he spent about a year living on a beach in, I believe, Vietnam or Cambodia, well, somewhere in the south. He was about a year there with, like, a supermodel,
off
and then
the
he
grid.
Came back.
Right.
So, I mean, there's concerns, and no matter what he says now, I mean, can he design an offense that isn't just an air raid offense that's going to succeed?
Well,
you know, it's a legitimate question to
ask. It is a legitimate question. I like that they hired Anthony Lynn, since we're going to start going through this. Because if we're talking about what is the opposite of the air raid offense, it's what Kyle Shanahan's been doing in San Francisco with his exotic run scheme-based offense.
Right.
It is – because when you think about air raid, four wide receivers, no one really goes in motion, throw it deep. That's air raid. You think about the Shanahan run game, it's constant motion. It's a lot of horizontal action. Like, those are two very different ideas. So I like that. Now, Anthony Lynn can do more than just that. I mean, Anthony Lynn's worked under a bunch of coaches. He was a head coach himself. He's actually very versatile in the type of run schemes he understands. So he might not do that exclusively, like rip off the Shanahan system. He might say, all right, we don't have a guy for that, so let's just become a power run team for this year.
I think Anthony Lynn's a great asset for the team.
I think he's a huge asset.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and look, I'm not going to go through every name because, honestly, we don't know all these guys, right? Like, no one knows who David Blau is, do they?
The assistant quarterback coach? I know a lot about him.
Yeah?
No, I know nothing about him.
Okay.
Well, I think the one name that jumps out to me is Brian Johnson and his position. I mean, not necessarily because he's listed as an assistant head coach, which is kind of odd to begin with,
right?
In my opinion, but him being an offensive pass game coordinator, the right. One thing he did before he became an OC in Philadelphia is that he was just that and a quarterback's coach out there. And you saw a development from Hurts in him, which I had done in my article, is how he developed Hurts and his game to get from where he was year one to becoming an MVP caliber or MVP candidate quarterback, actually.
Right.
You know, and most people with him coming out into the draft didn't see Hurts ever getting to that level. Now, whether it's because he was in multiple systems in college, was never able to catch on, so he never really saw what he really could be, or was it because of what Brian Johnson did and helped him develop to get to the next stage? But the one thing that I've always heard about with Brian Johnson in Philadelphia before he became an OC was how he handled Hurts, how he handled the passing game, and what he did to bring Hurts along. And I think that's such a key asset to have if we draft a quarterback, because we're going to need someone that's going to be able to be in that quarterback's ear every single day, especially because Kingsbury can only do so much as a coach, as a coordinator. He's got to concentrate on the entire offense. Having someone like Brian Johnson in the ear of a young quarterback, I think could potentially be invaluable, especially if it's someone like Jaden Daniels, because Jaden Daniels still has got some raw aspects to his game, although I think he's still also kind of pro-ready too at the same time. But yeah. Steve, you'll break that down more later.
Yeah, I will. Is this the Brian Johnson that is the lead singer of AC/DC, or is this another Brian Johnson?
Different Brian.
Yes.
Johnson. See, it would be more fun to the lead singer of AC/DC come in, back in black in someone's ear. That'd be fun.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. That would make home games so much more fun.
It would.
Oh, yeah.
Another name, of course, from another NFC team that they poached, Bobby Johnson, the offensive line coach from the Giants.
I didn't really understand that one. He didn't have a ton of success. They had talent that didn't really coalesce under his watch. So don't really get.
I think a lot of people are in that boat. I think part of it is they really, really, really just want as many Johnsons as possible. You know, that's
I don't even want to go there with the joke that went through my head.
Yeah. I wonder if it was the same one I had.
Probably so.
I'm sure it was, because that was what was intended. You know who? I am surprised they kept Bobby Engram from the previous team or coaching staff.
I mean, it's not that uncommon to keep one guy.
It's not. But I was a little bit surprised because we did see a lack of production from the receivers this year. Maybe they sat down with him, said, why did that happen? He had a good explanation, I hope, because, you know, we need the receivers to produce a lot more than they did last season.
I'd like to welcome back Ryan Kerrigan to Washington. That's cool to see him on the staff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was here last year.
Was he?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Same position.
Yeah, they just retained him.
Yeah.
But I do like the addition of Ken Norton as linebacker coach. Now we need to get him some linebackers now.
They literally, I can't emphasize enough, they almost literally don't have a linebacker group.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it's pretty thin, honestly.
Jamin Davis is a good starter in a role that's in a unit that's already got like a Fred Warner type of linebacker already in place. So you're really not wrong that we don't have a linebacker group.
They literally don't have, I mean, Jamin Davis, starter, okay, I'll give you that. Great, no, starter, yes. He's the only starting worthy linebacker currently on the roster.
Right.
If you were to, like, Steve, you know the WAR stat in baseball, obviously.
He's a plus one
WAR. Kind of linebacker is what Jamin Davis is.
Yeah, well, that for those of you who don't know, that's wins over replacement. That's become a standard in the sabermetrics, era of baseball analysis.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of because it's
no. Anyway. He's not a liability, but he's not a star.
Yeah. Right.
The only other there, it's weird seeing guys like Darryl Tapp are now coaching. He played And I distinctly remember his playing career, which is a lot. Look,
I mean, Norv Turner's son was here.
I know.
That's weird.
Twice, technically.
Yeah.
The first time he was popping pimples. the last name to mention, Larry Izzo, is now the specialty teams coach. He had a very good units in Seattle for years. So
you like Izzo's unit, huh?
Oh, yes. Yes. And you know, we got Izzo's
Johnsons
unit. We got
the
Johnsons.
Units.
You know.
Izzo's unit stands out amongst all the Johnsons.
Any other names really stand out to you guys?
No, it's hard to know now. I mean, I think people tend to gravitate towards the names that are more well known than others.
Of course. That's what we're doing.
My initial thought in my head was I was a bit unimpressed with Witt, but after hearing his presser, I'm more encouraged by that. Kingsbury, I'm still concerned about. The running back, I think Anthony Lynn is going to be a tremendous benefit to it. The rest of them, I could kind of take or leave them, to be honest.
Yeah, we don't know. I know a lot of what Joe Witt talked about, and I think Kingsbury mentioned it too, and I like this, that they purposefully wanted to get coaches from a bunch of different coaching staffs because they're like, we need new ideas. Let's bring in guys from every place we can and see what ideas we come up with. You know, that's a lot nicer than I knew this guy here, so I'm bringing him with me. You know, like bringing new ideas.
I do like that too. But Mark Bullock brought up a really great point. You know, it's great that you bring in all these voices and you bring in these guys with these different ideas and so forth. But if they don't coalesce and they kind of get on the same page, it could be disastrous. So that's where Dan Quinn really got to earn his money and be able to get all these different opinions and voices on the same page and try to coalesce into one philosophy, one scheme that's going to fit for this team. If he can manage that and he can get that together, I think this team is definitely going in the right direction. But if he can't do that, it's going to fall apart faster than it's ever going to get built.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I mean, when I look back on just the time we've done this podcast, the time this team was actually good was when they had a guy in their front office who said, I'm building a team that's going to do this. And granted, he had issues in the draft. He had issues in his drinking.
I was going to say, don't leave that out.
Yeah.
He also had issues in a bottle.
He came up, he said, this is our philosophy, and this team stuck to it, and they performed better. It's amazing how just having that mission statement can actually make a difference.
Right. I mean, if Scott McGlynn hadn't been an alcoholic, he might have been a decent, in all seriousness.
Yeah.
You know, the alcohol kind of ruined his career. If he did have kind of a strategic sense of things. I didn't always agree with the strategy, but he had it. And it was kind of working despite all there was a lot of chaos going on.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, that we've already covered. But so that was good to see that.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that's what we're going to get from this crew. The last thing we should mention, the Martys. Yeah, I know, Steve. The Martys are getting demoted to some, like, back basement office. So,
well, I think they're...
So what?
Yeah.
I think they're just setting them up to let them go. Well, I think Mayhew will probably stick around, but Herney definitely, after the draft, will probably be gone.
Yeah. Well, they have a 1 year left on their contract is what I heard for both of them, so it's probably that. All right, so let's talk about free agency because we got to do our position groups real quick. We're supposed to do defensive line and quarterbacks. Defensive line, well, the nice thing is we don't need to worry about defensive tackle because Washington is really deep at defensive tackle.
Maybe the only thing that Washington doesn't need to worry about.
Yeah, yeah. So our buddy Nolan from Tampa, he did his breakdown of the free agent defensive ends. I can just read through the top names he put real quick if that. You know.
Go ahead.
All right, so let's just do that. John Allen from the Bills, 17 sacks. Wait, that's not right. It's not the Bills.
Keep going.
Yes. Brian Burns, Panthers, 8 sacks. Daniel Hunter, Vikings, 16.5 sacks. Bryce Huff, Jets, 10 sacks.
And there's Josh Allen from the Jacksonville. I think he meant Allen like Jacksonville.
Yeah, that's it. That's a typo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jonathan Greenard from the Texans, 12.5 sacks. So those are his top edge rushers. He also made a note, Chase Young's going to be available.
No, thank you.
Pass. Za'Darius Smith.
Go ahead, try it.
Yeah. Yannick Nagaki. Nagaku, I don't know. Jadeveon Clowney, Leonard Floyd, Andrew Van Ginkel, and Dorrance Armstrong Jr. Are some other names he mentioned. Okay.
What people need to remember about this is that Washington needs probably two starting edge rushers. And they don't really need to save money by cutting people, okay? They've got enough money to do all this. A guy like Brian Burns, Danielle Hunter, why does he have a woman's name? I wouldn't totally surprise me if they signed somebody like that for one of these positions, because they really need to come up with somebody, and they can't just draft. They can't spend a first and second round draft pick on everybody. So they have to bring some folks in, and I tend to doubt they're going to put another high draft pick in the defensive line. They already have two of them. So don't be surprised, especially I think those two guys, Burns and Hunter, they may be after, you know, one or more of them.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked either. Now, one thing I'll point out, if you remember when I was talking about linebackers, there's some overlap, guys, because edge rushers can be linebackers or ends now. So like Allen, I think, is actually listed in both columns. So is Bryce Huff, for that matter. So
yeah, I mean, I think I see Allen more usually as a linebacker, outside linebacker. Yeah. But yeah.
It's neither here nor there. Also, what Dan Quinn likes to do is use a rushing linebacker and a rushing end and kind of play with both of them. So,
but I guess it should be said that technically speaking, we don't know if Washington's even going to be a 4-3 or 3-4. I think we can I would guess 3-4-3, but they haven't said it.
Historically, Dan Quinn comes from the 4-3 thing, but and so few teams play a traditional either now.
Right.
So,
I'm more on the side. I just prefer to see like a Brian Burns brought in and the other end just be, you know, with like KJ Henry, another draft pick, and even Two Hill, getting guys that are rotational pieces to where you can move Burns to either side. And you have the other side being taken by just, you know, guys that play a role, in that defense. So you don't have to, because I was always the biggest problem that I kind of always saw that I talked about before, having two first-round talents at the ends. You know, it's like they're staples at their positions. They don't really ever move them. That's where they want to be. And they just want, and, you know, they kind of want to do their first-round pick thing, try to take over a game and try to be the guy. You don't have the dogs. You don't have the, you know, the Jags on the other side that kind of do all the dirty work, that pick up the pieces that are left behind, and, you know, guys that actually play within the role, within the scheme, and do their job to the letter that the coach wants them to do it, while you get a little bit of freelancing on the other side. You know, and that's what I'd like to see in something like that.
I would also say, given what Quinn has done in his past, and I know like they don't want to be a cover three Legion of Boom defense necessarily all the time, but they like using a big guy as one of their ends as well. So it wouldn't be crazy to me if you time see Jonathan Allen lining up at defensive end as that heavy end, not the speed rusher, but the guy who's playing the run on the edge. So like that's something we can look for too.
It's not beyond the realm of possible.
Yeah.
Because one thing that Witt did say in his press conference, we didn't mention it before, was and he talked about how he was big into disguising pre-snap reads.
Yep. And
he said something like, you know, we want to play post-snap football or something like that. And what he meant by that was, don't give the quarterback the opportunity to easily diagnose the defense right up front. So and Washington wasn't particularly good at that last year. Disguise, and so I think that's one thing we can hopefully see, and that would mean, to Alex's point, move John Allen around, guys like that.
Now, I will say one thing our buddy Tampa did note is a lot of the current defensive ends are free agents. Obada, Bada, Casey Two Hill, and Smith Williams are all technically free agents right now.
They'll probably sign one or two of them, would be my guess. Right.
I mean, I thought that Casey Tuhill, like, he had a couple of really good games. Like, he's a good rotational guy in my mind.
F.A. Obata had a couple good games in there. James Smith Williams did, too. I think those three guys, the rest of them, we can take or leave them. But those three guys at times looked pretty good, all of them.
Well, I want to keep if we keep F.A. Obata, I need David Bada, because I like saying Obata
Bing. Then we need a Russell Bing. Obata Bada Bing.
Bada Obata. Bada Obata.
No, I like Bada Bada Bing.
Bada Bada Bing. Yeah.
Then we have a guy named after a vegetable in Benning Potato. We had him too.
Oh boy.
I'm probably insulting somebody's culture with that, but it's too funny. So, you know, it's comedy, people.
Maybe.
Benning Potato.
We only do this for entertainment. Entertainment purposes.
Yeah. So why don't we flip to the free agent quarterback market, though, Steve? I know you're still working on the column. Yeah. It's not a deep free agent class in
that's
the quarterback
to say the least. So Washington just needs to sign Kirk Cousins and get over it and bring him back. That would make everybody totally happy, right?
I'm logging off now.
Yeah. I will put on my riot gear.
Cousins is kind of the top guy on the board here, I'd say. You know, he's 35 years old. He's got ridiculous contract demands. I'm just kidding. They should definitely not bring Kirk Cousins back. No. And put aside the weirdo-ness part of it, it just they don't need to start off with a 35-year-old quarterback with a history of building stats and not building teams.
And a nice 500 career record.
Yeah, forget him. Ryan Tannehill's out there, another guy who's 35 years old, mediocre, a lot of money. Beyond that, there's a bunch of mediocre stars. You could maybe say Baker Mayfield might have potential. He's going to be available. There's some lower tier guys. You know, Marcus Mariota is only 30. He's out there. You could bring back Jacoby Brissett for another year if you wanted. I'm not impressed with any of these guys particularly. I think it's a bad year for quarterbacks. But some other players, Mitchell Trubisky, no. Tyrod Taylor, 35 years old. Sam Darnold, Drew Locke, you know, not impressive. Gardner Minshew, not impressive. Teddy Bridgewater, tons of injury problems. Tyler Huntley, Joe Flacco, Josh Dobbs. I mean, it goes downhill from there. So it's not a great class. Don't expect to find a starter, a non-Cousins solid starter in free agency.
No, I think it's definitely a – Kirk Cousins will probably go somewhere. Russell Wilson might get cut and then go somewhere. I would rather Kirk than Russell Wilson, just by the way. Like, I think Russell Wilson
is a guy who needs to be in a specific type of offense. If you don't have somebody who understands that, it's not going to go well.
Exactly. It's going to be interesting to see if they bring in one of those second-tier guys or bring back Jacoby Brissett, just because I think we all assume they're drafting a quarterback, regardless. Right. You guys know I'm always of that opinion that just because you drafted a guy, even if you traded up and drafted Caleb Williams, and I'm not saying you should, I'm saying if you did, I'm okay with benching him for a while. Just, I don't like rookies starting right away. They need some time to get used to the system. They need some time to get used to, you got to show up early. You're here training all day now. You're not going to classes ever. Not that anyone at USC ever's gone to classes as a football player. But,
maybe not.
Yeah. You know what I mean. Like, they need that time. Not a full season anymore. I accept that you can't just bench a guy for a year or two anymore, but you need to give him time.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the question really would be, does the Washington coaching staff feel comfortable in sticking with just Sam Howell as the backup and bring in somebody, you know, draft somebody in the seventh round and sit on a practice squad or whatever? That's the real question to me.
It's a big one.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the upside would be Howell has played and he's on a cheap contract.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The downside is they don't know him, number one, this coaching staff, and he was extremely inconsistent, as we've been over. So I don't know if you'd want that, you know. And also, if you want to move into a new era, sometimes it's better to just cut the cord, you know?
Yeah, I'm just a real big either If your target's Drake May, you bring in Jacoby Brissett. Where you keep Brissett, but if it's Jalen Daniels, you bring in Tyrawn Taylor. Because either quarterback you go through, you tailor the offense to what that quarterback can do. And I think those vets kind of correlate with what those two rookies can do on the field in terms of what they run in offensive schemes and so forth. That's where I'd go. They're really the only two quarterbacks of interest that I'd have on that list, to be honest with you.
There's not a lot there. I wouldn't be shocked if Cliff Kingsbury is like, well, I want one guy who kind of knows what I'm doing, and maybe he goes and reaches out to Colt McCoy to see if he wants to be that third string super vet, just to have a guy in the room that he
knows.
Not a
bad thought. I hadn't thought about that.
System.
Yeah.
I don't. Did Colt McCoy retire officially? I don't think he played anywhere last year. Did he?
I don't remember an announcement. It may be one of those like forced retirement because nobody wants me kind of retirements.
He's 37. I just Googled that. So like he's definitely way up there. I'm just gonna look at his. He was with the Cardinals up till 2022, so he didn't play last year. But you know, like that's the kind of thing you do with a Colt McCoy. You say vet minimum. Hey, here's $1 million. Just sit in here and tell these kids like to study.
Yeah.
Because my QB coach can't just be the only one telling them to study. You know, like. You're bringing him in for that role, the player coach. The more I say it, the more I actually like my stupid idea. So,
not a bad thought. But that only works if they do draft a quarterback at number one and all of that. I mean,
right, number two or right. number two even.
Or yeah, I meant number one meaning first round
pick.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't hurt to put someone like that with. If some reason they decide they don't want to draft a quarterback, it wouldn't hurt to have that guy in there to help.
True. Well, I mean, in that case, you need to find a legit starter somehow. That's true. I mean, and we went over the free agents, so there's not a lot.
Yeah.
So are you going to trade? I mean, you know, would they trade for Justin Fields?
Yeah, you know, I hope not.
I'd hope not, too.
A lot of people would hope not, you know, with that.
There's that weird segment of people who seem obsessed with, yeah, do that. Let's do that. That sounds fun.
Weird segment of people who always think that the entire team needs to be constructed before you draft a quarterback and are never happy.
Right.
You know, that's not realistic either.
Well, I mean, look,
my biggest problem with Fields is the fact that if you trade for Fields, who's going to go into his third offensive scheme, you have one more year where you have to commit to a fifth year there's a fifth year option as opposed to just drafting a quarterback, molding him. No, and you know, in 3 years, if he's your guy or not. Fields, you just hope that he catches on to a system right away next year and he shows he can be the guy, or you commit like 27 some odd million dollars for a fifth year option and he winds up flopping on you.
Well, also, yeah, I agree. And I threw in there that because I'm a business guy here, and this is cynical, but I think a new owner with a new management group behind him wants an entirely new star to rebuild a fan base around. And Justin Fields is a retread, as a retread. Whereas you bring in whoever, pick your, you know, Caleb Williams, you know, Mayo, whoever, there's who you build your you get your fan base excited around. So I think the ownership would be far more likely to do that for that reason.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page that that's the most likely outcome is they're still drafting somebody. But
since we have to cover free agency, by the way, how this works, if you haven't been with us before, so we're going to cover free agency between now and when the start of free agency. And yes, it's my fault. We started like 2 weeks too late, but, you know, sue me. It's free. And then we will cover, we're going to do a draft segment. We'll cover every position group in the draft. Mm-hmm. Between, you know, here coming up between now and when the draft starts. And then we will do position group breakdowns after the draft through the remainder of the season or the off season. So that's what's coming up in the long term.
Yep. That is the plan. That's usually what we do is Steve maps it all out for us. It's almost always late somehow because there's really more to do than there is weeks. That's the real problem.
If I had done this What I should have done is taken 1 week off and then started right after Washington, right after the playoffs started. That's what we should have done. And I I've done it 2 years in a row now. So here we are.
Yeah. Yep. But it's fine. We get through it. We just find a boring group that we rush through.
It's really only free agency that we're rushed on. The rest of it works out. Cause I, you know, yeah. I do this backwards. You know, so we time it with the start of the draft and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And also the free agency kind of hard to do before teams start resigning people.
Well, before we even knew who the coaches were.
Also that.
That's a big one.
Yeah. I think they should play a dime defense all the time. We don't have coaches. That's their plan. Yeah. All right. That should wrap us up, though. We covered the quarterbacks, though, right? Like, it's not exciting. It's not a great quarterback class. It is not. It's a great draft class for quarterbacks, though.
It is a great draft class for quarterbacks. We'll save it.
Have you started watching some, Steve?
I've started thinking about it. Yeah, I've got a long way to go, but yeah.
All right, guys.
What's your initial rank in the top three, real quick?
I'm not doing it, Dave.
Okay.
Give me your bottom three instead.
I'm not doing it. Oh, the bottom three. That's easy. Johnson, Smith, and Tomlinson. Those three are the bottom.
There you go. He just made up names.
They're out there somewhere. Those three guys are playing quarterback somewhere.
They probably are. All right, guys. We will talk to you all next week. Later.
Later.